Kate McInturf is a senior researcher at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. She's the director for the CCPA's Initiative on Gender Equality in Public Policy, Making Women Count. She's an ongoing contributor to the Alternative Federal Budget and the author of this report released last week by the CCPA, The Best and Worst Place to Be a Woman in Canada. Thanks for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
Kate, tell us about the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives.
Sure. Well, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives is a national think tank. We work on public policy issues in a number of areas, and we also have provincial offices in several provinces that work at the provincial public policy level.
So your report on the best and worst place to be a woman in Canada made a big splash last week in the mainstream media. Were you pleased with the report's impact?
I was thrilled, of course. It's always, you always hope that people will read your work, and it was fantastic to see so many mainstream media outlets talking about gender equality.
Was this the first report of its kind from the CCPA?
It's not the first report that we've done on an issue related to public policy and gender equality. It's the first time we've done this kind of index, though. And this was something that I was interested in, having followed some of the international gender equality indexes, which are put out annually by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum.
So what's the most important criteria to analyze when compiling this kind of report? And how do you gauge the success or failure rate of different cities?
Sure. Well, I think starting out with the report, the first thing was just to figure out what kind of data was available, because it's really important to make sure if you're comparing cities that you're comparing apples to apples. So I had to be asking questions that I could answer with accurate and comparable data. And so that meant that I relied almost exclusively on government surveys. And that also meant that there were certain things I couldn't do. For example, I couldn't talk about rural women. I couldn't talk about some of Canada's smaller communities because there simply wasn't the research available. And then I think one of the other things that was very important for me in putting this together was not only to look at the different areas in which men and women, you know, see gaps or don't see gaps in some cases, as in the area of education, was also to make sure that I was looking at violence against women. That's an area where it is very difficult to find good, reliable statistical information, and for that reason, the international gender equality indices don't measure it. But I think that's something that is changing. I know the United Nations is working on compiling better statistics on violence against women, and because we do have some of those statistics here in Canada, I thought it was really important, because obviously if you think about what is making an impact in a woman's everyday life, experiencing, you know, sexual assault or domestic violence is a huge negative impact, and so it was really important to me to have that be part of the picture.
What were some of the big takeaways that you found in the results of the study?
Well, there were some clear trends. I think that one of the things, there were some real regional differences, and so then you have to ask the question, well, at the provincial level, is something different happening in Quebec, for example, where, you know, the three Quebec cities that were in the index all did very well, and Quebec City came out on top, versus the provinces or regions that didn't do as well. And it seemed to me that some of the keys to the success of the Quebec cities had to do with public policy at the provincial level that was really helping women and men balance work and family life better. So affordable child care, family leave policies, parental leave policies. That meant that not only were women able to spend more hours in paid work and see their employment rates rise and in some cases see their job level rise into those senior management positions, but also more of a balance, I think, with, you know, we're seeing increasingly men take parental leave in Quebec, and that's made a big difference. Some of the other things that clearly, to me, I would say are making a difference are in cities like Quebec City and Ottawa-Gatineau, where you have a really large public sector employer, and you have public sector unions that have very proactive pay equity policies, you really do see the impact of that in a much smaller gap in men's and women's paychecks. And so clearly when you pay attention to what people are being paid and you track that, and you're, as I say, proactive about it, it does result in a narrower gap. And then finally, I think one of the things that that Quebec and Ontario both are doing that stands out is they both have fairly detailed provincial level action plans to address both family violence or domestic violence and sexual assault. And I think the fact that you see some political will and some coordination there at the provincial level hopefully is starting to really make a difference in bringing those numbers down.
Did anything really stand out in the results? Like, did anything surprise you?
Yeah, I was really surprised that Edmonton came out on the bottom. I have to say, I didn't expect that. I thought that given sort of how well the economy was doing in Alberta, that rising economic tide would lift all boats. But it turns out that it's not. That's not to say that you know, employment rates are not high. They are high in Alberta, and paychecks are higher than average there. But the gap between men's paychecks and women's paychecks is also in Edmonton the biggest in the country, with men bringing home $21,000 a year more than women on average. And so I think that was a real surprise, and I think that kind of speaks to a gap in economic policy, that it's not enough just to sort of sit back and say, well, you know, overall we see economic growth. You have to ask the question, who is benefiting from this economic growth, and are there ways to ensure that more of the people in our region benefit from that?
So the report states that local efforts to map gender inequality are becoming increasingly invisible at the provincial and national level. Organizations that used to provide a venue for communities to share their experiences are disappearing. Why is this happening?
Well, I think one of the pragmatic reasons is that in 2006, the federal agency, the Status of Women, changed its policy and stopped funding research and advocacy for gender equality. And so that really reduced the capacity of national organizations to provide a platform for local organizations to come together to talk about the issues that they were concerned with and to engage in policy debates and to translate what they were seeing every day providing services into the kind of research reports that can have an impact on public policy. I think the other thing that's contributed to the lack of this kind of policy platform is there's been a shift not only in government funding but in foundational funding as well towards strictly funding the provision of services. And while that's essential, of course, that we absolutely need funding for services, I think one of the things that we're losing track of is the fact that the people who provide those services, so say the folks who are working in a women's shelter and providing services for women fleeing domestic violence every day, you know, they have insights into what makes good policy in that area, and they just don't have the time or the resources anymore to bring their insights to the provincial and national conversation and to speak to decision makers about what they're seeing every day. And so I would really love to see a shift away from that separation, that strict separation of service delivery on one side and then, you know, engaging in policymaking on the other side. I really think we need to do more to raise the voices of the people working at the local level to the provincial and national scene so that they can share the insights that they have from their work and from what they do every day.
How does society improve access for voices like that?
Well, we really do need those national organizations and provincial organizations that are funded to provide a platform for policy dialogue. And I think we need to be realistic about the fact that, you know, if you have, for example, a shelter organization, and they're, as you would expect, they're putting every human resource hour, every staff hour they can into providing services, you can't then expect them to suddenly have extra hours in a day to come and engage in policy forum and to collect data about what they're observing. You have to actually fund that. You have to support, you know, the staff hours to do that work. And I think the benefit of that will far exceed any investment that we put into it. I think we'll see a huge benefit from that. But we do actually have to benefit. We do actually have to invest in that.
Here's some of what the report discovered about Montreal. The city's overall ranks number 4, with an employment rate of 57% for women compared to 64% for men. Only 43% of women hold full-time jobs. There's a smaller than average wage gap, with women earning 77 cents on the male dollar, and also a slightly higher likelihood that a woman will hold high school, college, or university diplomas. So relatively speaking, are these good results for the city?
They are. They are. I think on especially the economic indicators that you've listed here, you do see above average results. I think the one area that I might sort of red circle out of that is the percentage of women holding full-time jobs. I think, women in Montreal, as across Quebec, have benefited from the difference that subsidized access to subsidized childcare has made. We've seen, research showing that women's employment rates have gone up in Montreal and in Quebec overall. But of course, that's not the whole picture. First of all, not every working woman has a child, and second, if not all jobs are created equal, and if we still see that relatively low percentage of women in full-time jobs, that's obviously having an impact on women's economic security. If you're only working part-time, if you're working in a lower wage sector, then you're going to have trouble making ends meet. And so so while the performance overall is better than average, and obviously ranking fourth out of 20 is an excellent result, there's still a few areas where obviously I think more work could be done.
Right, like there's too few sexual and reproductive health clinics in Montreal, with just one for every 334,000 women. So what can Montreal do, for instance, to improve women's access to this kind of healthcare?
That's right. Well, and I should qualify that's standalone reproductive health care clinics. So there are also health care clinics provided through hospitals. But yes, I think across Canada, the access to sexual and reproductive health care is uneven. It's better in the cities, as terrible as some of those numbers sound, than it is for rural women, where it's a real struggle. And I think, we've seen the Morgenthaler Clinic closing in New Brunswick. So obviously this isn't an area where we can say, well, we're doing fine and we can, rest on our laurels. I think we need to make sure that all women have access, and men to sexual health care. And I think in particular in this area, not every group of women has equal access. So I know from working with organizations that work with women with disabilities, this is a huge challenge for them to find any kind of sexual health care clinic that will treat them, in a non-discriminatory manner, that has the appropriate facilities so that they can access the same health care as everyone else. So certainly there are still challenges here.
This report is aimed at mapping the gaps in gender equality in Canadian cities and doesn't really focus on highlighting the efforts to close the gaps. So what are some of the specific efforts underway to increase gender equality across Canada?
Sure. Well, this is what gives me cause for hope, is whenever I'm in a city and I'm working with women's organizations at the local level, it's just amazing to me the tirelessness, the energy, and the really innovative things that folks are doing at the local level. In Montreal, you have Women in Cities International that's doing amazing, groundbreaking work on making cities more livable for women, engaging in gender budgeting initiatives, in urban planning initiatives that really draw attention to the ways in which men and women use city services and engage with their municipal governments. And this really is making a huge difference for women at the municipal level. And there are really innovative kinds of projects. One that I'm a particular fan of is something that started in New York, and now it's spread to, I think, 5 or 6 Canadian cities. It's called I Holla Back, and this is an almost entirely volunteer-led effort, which allows women in any city where this exists to, if they're being harassed on the street, if they're, walking down the street and someone shouts at them out of a car, or they're at a bus stop and someone's making them feel uncomfortable coming on to them, they can text in the story of the harassment, and it gets put on a map of the city. And what's happened in cities that have Holoback is that the people who run the web platform then can take that map and go to their city council, which they've done here in Ottawa, and say, you know, if you look at this map, what you see is a whole lot of reports of harassment at bus stops and on public transit. And the result of that is in Ottawa that we have, you know, our public transit now has a public education campaign on harassment and sexual assault. So these kinds of volunteer-led, creative, innovative initiatives are happening across the country, and they're making a real impact on women's lives. And as I said before, you know, I wish we had better platforms to really amplify those voices and share, give the women who are doing that work the opportunity to share what they're doing, you know, with other communities, so that we could have better places to live across Canada.
Kate McInturf is the author of The Best and Worst Place to Be a Woman in Canada. She's also a senior researcher at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Thanks for speaking with Off the Hour.
My pleasure.